Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson. And of course, we have
Casey Clapp, the other host.
Wow, Casey, our third deadly stem.
You think so, eh?
I can't believe we've made it this far.
You can't? You think we're gonna get halfway through it, get struck down by lightning, smote for our sort of flippant use of such intense, deadly stems?
Yeah, Yggdrasil was going to come to life and come after us.
Yeah, scary. That's real scary stuff. And luckily, we're okay. We're doing fine.
Yeah.
So far, everything seems to be working out.
As long as we end the night with a prayer.
Ah, well, which we always do.
Of course. I do that anyway.
Yeah, that's pretty standard stuff, dude.
I kneel at the foot of my bed. Hi, Case.
Hello, Alex. Good day to you, and I hope it's going very well.
It is going okay. You know what? I've been eating very properly, I would say.
Yes, 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 yes.
Lots of vegetables and fruits and seeds and things. And this morning, I got a hankering for a bagel, egg, and cheese. But I ate that, and I cannot tell you how sick it made me feel.
No way.
After like 2 weeks of fruits and vegetables.
That's right, because you've been going through a process of getting yourself to essentially, I don't want to overstep. Do you want to describe it?
No, please step.
Okay, I was just going to say, a process of you shifting your diet away from things that you essentially don't make you feel good.
Yes.
And you've already, of course, done this with alcohol, the famous...
The famous alcohol.
I meant to say your famous process of sobriety. We've talked about it quite a bit on this show.
Nearly 4 years sober from alcohol.
Nearly 4 years. God, yep. That's just crazy.
I have to say from alcohol.
Yes. Yeah, it's very fair.
But yeah, I've been reading a book by Alan Carr.
Mm-hmm. And he also has a thing about alcohol, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Alan Carr wrote a book in the 70s about how to quit smoking.
Yeah, that's right.
Cigarettes.
That's right.
And everybody I know who has quit cigarettes has read that book and it's worked.
Yeah.
It's like this miracle thing. And he wrote a book on emotional eating, Casey.
Yes, exactly.
Which I have to say I've been participating in since I was 12 years old.
I have emotions and I eat together. Well,
it's a deadly combination.
Bad news. Yeah. And well, we've actually talked about this, you and I personally, not on the show, just mm-hmm. over lots of time, because you would have like digestion issues.
Yes.
And then you would cut something out and then you try something different. You went vegetarian for a while mm-hmm. and then came back and like, you just weren't getting any real results, I guess, were long lasting.
Yeah.
So this is, you're feeling good about it. Is that right?
Yes. You were sort of the one who put in my mind, like, it doesn't matter what your gut biome is like. If you're not eating fiber, if you're not feeding all of your microbes, they're not going to be working because they feed on fiber, right?
Yes, and that's something I learned from reading something. I don't even remember what it was. Probably a Michael Pollan book. It's what it always is.
Oh, sure.
But yeah, that's... thank you, Alex. I'm glad to hear that. But yeah, it's I learned this and I was like, God, okay, you got to feed those things and then everything starts to work properly.
And you know, I have been eating a lot of fiber. And things are definitely improving.
Hey, that's fantastic to hear.
I then had a little flub this morning with the bagel, egg, and cheese, and I am regretting it.
You know, but I think honestly, in the sense of food, and I don't want this to be taken too much like towards alcohol or something, but like in terms of food, having that one like kind of relapse where you then eat that bagel and you're like, oh man, I remember why I don't do this.
Totally.
And then you come back and then you're like, you kind of remind yourself in, I don't know, I don't want to say positive or negative, you just remind yourself why you're doing it without like really super intense dire consequences.
Yeah, actually, Casey, at the end of this Alan Carr book, he says, now have your final feast.
Yeah.
I want you to go buy, you know, like what has been your biggest like vice, like whether it's a piece of cake or a box of cookies or something.
Yeah.
Eat the entire thing.
Oh man.
And really feel what it feels like.
You're gonna go down to Voodoo Donuts. You're going to get the giant donut. That's like $400. Or if you eat it in 90 seconds, it's free.
The cock and balls.
Yeah. Something like that.
I hate that place. But he says like eat the whole thing and just like be really conscious of how you're feeling and how it tastes. And the unspoken thing is it should be revolting to you at this point.
At this point, yeah.
And it was. I did not have a good time eating that bagel.
Hey, that's great. I'm really happy to hear it.
Thanks.
And then, I know you're also a big cook, so it does encourage you to say, okay, what am I going to cook that's going to taste really good?
Totally.
And I think it's very topical because today, of course, we are talking about something that has quite a bit to do with food.
That's right. It is, in fact, a food.
It quite literally is.
It has so much to do with food that it is one.
It's
like how owners start looking like their dogs. Casey, today we are talking about the common fig.
That's right. Ficus carica.
Ficus carica.
Yes, the famous fig of... everything that you're thinking of.
Totally.
Except the other famous ones that we've already covered on this show.
Yes, like the strangler.
Exactly, and the religious fig.
That's right.
I guess we can call it the religious fig. I think that's fine.
Buddha's fig.
Yeah, the fig of fame.
That's right.
This is the other fig of other fame. This is the one that you wish was moved just slightly a little bit to the left or right so you can really see what Adam was working with. Initially, when I was coming up with all these trees, I actually had this tree on the lust side of the equation.
That's right, yeah.
Because I was going to say, yeah, okay, well, that's always... the fig leaf is the classic thing that covers up the genitals of all these, like, famous characters of yore.
Yes.
So I was like, all right, great, that's going to be it. And then, of course, as you know now...
oh, we discovered...
it was not going to be. Yeah. It was not good enough. We had to really get up to the next level.
For sure. And Casey, of course, you know, we're in the midst of our seven deadly stems.
That's right.
And this deadly stem is gluttony. I can't wait to find out why, but we got to do so after a quick break. A word from our sponsors. We will be right back with the seven deadly stems here on Completely Open.
future.
Hey, let me ask you this. You ever taken a walk and just felt inspired? Maybe you discovered your new favorite restaurant, or popped into the library and found a book that you really wanted to read, or you're like, hey, I think this car dealership used to be a Taco Bell. Well, there's a podcast about this kind of thing now with comedian and actor Alan McLeod, one of the funniest guys. It's called Walking About. It's a new podcast that treks into the simple joy of walking and its connections to health, history, creativity, and of course, community. In each episode, Alan invites a friend to share a little stroll and see where the sidewalk takes him. Alan McLeod has guests including Mike Mitchell, Spoon Man, Spoon Nation for Life. You got Colton Dunn. You got Janet Varney, Eva Anderson, Whitmer Thomas, Gabrus, Ed Begley Jr., Catherine Spears, Andy Richter, and of course, Burger Boy, Nick Weiger. Some of the funniest people. You know this podcast is going to be an absolute hoot. Maybe you could even listen to it while you're taking your walks. So lace up your podcasting shoes and listen to Walking About, out now, wherever you get your pods. You know, here I am at the ripe old age of 35. And one thing that has become really important to me just over the last couple of years is privacy. Besides what I tell you here on the podcast, I basically don't want anyone to know anything about me unless I choose to tell them. And one way I up my privacy game is with NordVPN. Now, if you are like me and didn't know what a VPN was until a couple of weeks ago, let me tell you, a VPN is a virtual private network. And I said to myself, well, sure, that sounds cool, but I really don't know what it is or does. And then the moment I turned it on, I said, I get it now. A VPN changes your IP address, hides your virtual location, and encrypts your connection, which allows you to increase your privacy online. How many times per day do you get scam calls or spam email because your data got leaked somehow? I also get emails from companies saying, hey, I see you bought something with us recently. Unfortunately, we got hacked and your data is now being used to harm you. With a VPN, you do not have to worry about any of this. It secures you when you're using public Wi-Fi. It stops marketers and internet service providers from tracking and collecting your browsing history and your messages and lots of other private data. And you can change your location to any of hundreds of countries, unlocking the power of, I don't know, say, British Netflix. I didn't know how important it was until I started using one. That's the truth. So if you just want to check out the features and see if it's right for you, I bet there's something about a VPN that will surprise you. So get started with NordVPN at nordvpn.com/trees. That's nordvpn.com/trees. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and the link is in the description. Now go get secure. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking gluttony through the eyes of the common fig.
That's right.
Casey, fig. Let's imagine, as we do every episode. Well, I guess we could be in pretty much any nursery in the world.
You probably could be, yeah. Yeah. But I would suggest, Alex, if I may.
Please.
That instead of being in a nursery, we are in the ancient Fertile Crescent.
That is so much more interesting and cool. Casey, yeah, let's imagine that you and I are walking through that old Fertile Crescent and mm-hmm. we come across some common figs.
Yeah.
Let's ID this tree.
All right. So, common fig. You're familiar with it. I'm familiar with it.
Of course.
We are, of course, walking through the Fertile Crescent.
Yes.
Where the native fig tree there is one of the only figs that we humans eat, which is Ficus carica.
Mm-hmm.
This is the common fig, and it is a very small tree or a giant shrub, depending on how you think about it.
Interesting.
It's another one of those, as they say.
Well, for the sake of the podcast, let's just flub the numbers.
Yeah, we're going up. Yeah. We're going to assume that it has a single stem, but it can get up to like 70 feet is one thing I read.
That's a tree.
That's definitely a tree. But like it was described as a large shrub that gets between 40 and 70 feet, which I'm like, okay.
Come on.
My other research, my Oregon State lovely website that I go to, they have it at 10 meters, which is just about 30 or so feet.
Cool.
So it's relatively large, medium-sized tree, and it usually grows with a big rounded canopy, and it can get really wide. It has these long kind of weird stems that come out and usually a lot of sprouts. So as you're walking up to it, it looks like this big poof of foliage. It actually reminds me a lot of what you would think of with the noni.
Yeah.
Our old lovely tree that is the canoe boat. That is the canoe fruit that goes all over the world.
That's right.
So in the tropics, it just kind of grows everywhere. You just kind of see it popping up out of random spots because it can grow anywhere. Our fig is very similar to that, the common fig.
Wow, okay.
I've seen it in Europe growing out of the side of a like a canal brickwork that was just popping out in Italy, just being like, what's up?
Oh,
just growing.
What a treat to have a tree that grows that way that also produces an amazing fruit instead of the fucking tree of heaven, which is the equivalent here. Well, it'll just grow through a crack in the sidewalk and it's like a nightmare. Well, Casey, I'd like to end with the fruit, I think.
Okay, cool.
So let's get the other shit out of the way and let's talk about the bark.
Let's talk about that bark. You walk up, you see this big, specifically tree-sized tree, and you're going to first notice that it is just gray and uninteresting.
Bummer.
It is, I don't even know if I should say utility bark.
Oh, but wow.
A lot of figs have this very gray, smooth bark, so it's very, very much in line with what you'd expect. But it also doesn't get as large. They usually have many smaller stems. And the grayness is just completely just normal. Like, it doesn't change. It doesn't actually become cracked. It doesn't become furrowed. It doesn't flake. It doesn't do anything. It's just lovely, perfectly smooth bark.
Okay.
I know, Alex, you're not very excited about it.
I'm not a big... I mean, bark is hard for me to get excited.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
And gray utility bark or non-utility bark...
It's not going to get you there.
...is like my least favorite kind of bark.
Yeah.
My least favorite kind of my least favorite part of the tree.
Yes. Meanwhile, what you're really wanting to look at, I get it, is the leaf.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the leaf of this particular fig tree?
Who isn't? Fig leaf is like... fig leaf is
exactly
like a phrase in itself.
It
like,
is. Yeah.
I almost hear fig leaf more than I hear fig.
Ah, interesting. I also think that with like cherry blossom trees.
Sure, yeah.
It's like, it's just a cherry tree that has blossoms like all cherry trees, but they call it the cherry blossom tree.
Totally.
Anyway, this is a fig that has not the the single leaf that we've talked about with our other figs, where it's just a simple leaf. It's usually a nice oval, elliptic, like standard run-of-the-mill leaf shape. This has lobes.
Oh, yeah.
Three lobes or five lobes is normal, but you can find them with zero lobes, where they just look like these big, wide-spaced, kind of funny-looking leaves that, funny enough, look to me like mulberries, which they are in Moraceae, the mulberry family.
Mm.
So it looks like a mulberry because they're in the mulberry family, but you're 99% of the time going to find them with either three big lobes or five lobes with two on either side of the petiole. They're kind of like earlobes. They're kind of like side note lobes.
It's got that classic dinosaur footprint sort of thing.
Yes. Oh, that's such a perfect description. Exactly. Yeah.
It also kind of reminds me of the sassafras, Casey.
Yes, it does. Yeah. They're not related in a very close sense. But
a great leaf.
It's a great leaf and they're huge.
A leaf is also, I mean, everything kind of pales in comparison for me compared to like the fruit.
Yeah.
Of a tree.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But this leaf is cool. It kind of has my favorite aspects of a maple leaf.
Oh, really?
With like the softness of like a white oak, you know?
Interesting. Yeah. Cause it's got those rounded lobes on it.
Yeah. I really like it.
Interesting. And it is big. It gets up to like, I think about 8 or 10 inches long. Like it's a pretty huge thing. Yeah.
That's shocking.
Yeah, they really can get large, and they're on these big, thick twigs, which is always a telltale sign that you got a big leaf. So you have to have a big twig to hold on to big leaves. as they say. It's very common.
I was going to say, look at the feet.
Yeah, just got to look at the feet. You'll know. Which is why, of course, they had to hide all of the private parts.
That's because, right. You know, yes.
They had to have a leaf that was big enough.
Yeah, so that leaf covering Adam's dick was like 10 inches long. Exactly. That should tell you something.
Whoa, Adam, baby, cool.
You know, if you're God and you're creating the very first man, why not?
Hey, in his image.
Right.
Who knows? The real thing about this, as you noted, is the fruit.
Yes.
But Alex, of course you would say, Casey, don't skip over the flowers. You're talking about the fruit.
Well, they're one and the same.
Part and parcel. Yeah. Yes, you have that exactly right. Now, we've talked about this before, so I'll just give a quick little update. A fig fruit is a fig flower. They are one and the same. A fig is a inverted flower where the actual many multitudes of tiny little flowers are actually inside an inverted receptacle.
Yeah.
Receptacle being the part that usually holds onto the flower. It's kind of that cup that the flower is attached to that then attaches to what's called the peduncle, which is the stem of the flower that connects it to the stem of the tree.
Mm.
So the whole thing is called a cinchonia, or rather they are called cinchonia. It is called a cinchonium.
Okay.
So a cinchonium is this really interesting thing with this tiny little eye hole in the very bottom.
Right.
And that is where you have the famous wasps that go up into it.
Casey, you're going to call a hole in the bottom an eye hole? Oh. Just call it what it is.
All right. It's a bunghole.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome, everyone. Now, Alex, do you know what a bunghole actually is?
What is a bunghole?
It's the hole in a wine barrel that you would open up and then dip in your thing to taste it or test it to see if it's in the right thing.
Great image.
It's called a bung.
Good, good. Yeah,
so
thank
the bung
you.
Hole.
Perfect.
Yeah. There you go.
Let's move on.
Oh, God. Is this lust? Are we doing lust again here? No. Oh. We got to keep it nice. Anyway, so what happens famously is this wasp will go into the bottom of the fig, and then it will twist around inside. It will ovuposit, as a female wasp, into the ovaries inside of these teeny tiny little flowers.
Ovuposit? And
yes.
Like deposit its eggs?
Yes, it'll deposit its eggs.
Okay.
And now I should say, Alex, that way we can make sure everyone's okay with this, it's called an ostiole. But in parentheses, they call it an eye sometimes.
Okay.
Of this fig. It's the very bottom of a fig that is a little teeny tiny hole.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this female will go in and rip off their wings as it goes in. Like, the hole is so tight. The little females have an antenna, and they use that to find another entire fig. They fly out of fig A, and in that fig is also the male pollinating flowers.
Okay.
So they get a little pollen on them, they chew out, they go fly over to the next one that they find, they crawl in, they rip off their antenna, they rip off their wings because the hole is so tight.
Yeah.
And they're so like absolutely instinctually called to go into that tight little thing.
Wow.
They oviposit, they get rid of all of their eggs and all these things, and if enough of the flowers are fertilized in a traditional fig, then that whole cinchonium will then mature and there will be seeds that are fertilized. As that whole thing happens, some of those eggs will hatch. They will be mostly female, some males. Males hatch early. They actually will pollinate the females as those females are still in their eggs.
Oh.
And then it dies. I think it actually maybe crawls, maybe it may do a, like burrow a hole in some species out of the fig and then die.
The mother.
No, this is the father. This is the male wasps
come
out first.
Okay.
Then the females come out. They are already ready to go. Then they will fly away and start the cycle again.
So if you see a wasp flying around enjoying its life, it's probably a female wasp?
Well, only for these figs. There are thousands and thousands of wasp species.
Sure.
Some of them do all sorts of stuff. Okay. A lot of them are the ones that you see, like the paper wasps that you're familiar around your house.
Mm.
Then others are these, they just do all sorts of different stuff. It's a wild thing. These are only the fig wasp kind of subgenre.
Yeah, this is a this is alien-esque.
This is
kind of creepy to listen to the process. It's like, oh, weird. It's so outside of like what I know.
Yeah.
That it feels like somebody's like making it up.
It totally is. I mean, how does that even evolve, right? Like, how does that evolve? It's crazy.
Yeah, it makes so little sense that it seems like a bad choice.
Yeah,
for evolution.
But it's really good because now every species is 100% dedicated to the other species that it has its relationship with.
Yeah.
That both of them have to survive. And so it basically says, all right, this is you and me. Like, if something goes wrong on my side or your side, we both die. So you don't mess this up. And they're both into it.
True love, damn.
It really is. Now, the species of wasp for the common fig is Blastophaga or Blastophaga sinensis.
Sinensis.
Yes, P-S-E-N-E-S.
Mm.
So it could be Piscines, but I'm 90% positive I know that's P, quiet. So that is our species. Got that lovely symbiotic relationship. Now, throw that all out the window for our lovely common fig. Because our common fig is actually unique in that it will produce not only these kinds of figs that need this process, it will also produce figs that grow without being fertilized and become succulent and juicy. And those are called parthenocarpic.
What the hell?
Yes, it's very strange, and we've talked about it a little bit here and there.
I've heard that word before. Yeah, from you.
I think so. I was like, I know we've
who
chatted.
Else would it have been from?
Well, there's lots of people out there. Well, the idea, Alex, is that there are some figs. They have like three different varieties, and they do like multiple different flushes of figs per year.
The common fig?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And so there are three main kind of cultivated types. One is called caducus, and these are figs that don't produce a very first early crop, which is called a breba crop, I believe. B-R-E-B-A.
Okay.
And this is essentially the crop that was a bud last year. Spring comes and it grows and becomes a nice little teeny tiny first fig. And then after that, you have another crop that comes. It's like a bigger crop that has to be pollinated later on. So there's also this intermittent one, and then there are persistent varieties. And essentially, these are three different kinds of ways that this fig tree will grow its figs.
Wow.
And it's fascinating because it has a lot to do with why we're talking about this tree to begin with. The easiest way to say this is the caducus figs are those that do not usually produce a breba crop, and they drop unpollinated cinchonia of the main crop. Then there's the intermittent kinds, and they will have a fair to large parthenocarpic edible breba, which means that it will grow these initial figs that don't need to be pollinated. They are parthenocarpic, which means they essentially just don't get pollinated. They don't have any or maybe a few viable seeds in it, but no wasp has gone in, yet they still get big and juicy and delicious.
So those are the ones that we like to eat.
Yes, we like to eat those. Okay. We like to eat both, actually.
Okay.
But this other kind, this intermittent, they will drop their unpollinated cinchonia. So remember I said that if the initial crop doesn't get pollinated with those wasps, well, the fig tree, if it doesn't get enough pollinated individual flowers, it will abort that entire fig and kill all the little fig wasps that were in there, as essentially saying, you wasp did not do your job, therefore your entire line gone.
Oh.
So if the fig wasp does not do its job, all of its children die.
Its job being to
pollinate.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I was going to say fertilize.
Essentially it's
kind
the same
of,
thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Those are interchangeable in our conversation today.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Oh my God.
That's the intermittent. Then there's this third kind. It's called persistent. Those are the ones that may or may not produce this parthenocarpic breba crop, this very first one, and they retain their unpollinated edible cinchonia from the main crop. So they are the ones that will keep some of their very first initial ones that are not pollinated, that grow really big, and they will also keep the ones that are unpollinated that come later, that second crop.
Okay.
In the later, like, middle of summer kind of season.
That kind of seems like commercially the one you would want to put all your eggs in that basket.
Yeah, that's an excellent wasp metaphor there.
Put all your eggs in that fig. Don't put your eggs all in one fig.
Yeah, yeah. Or if you do, make sure that you really, really fertilize that fig.
Because the Cinconium breba will abort your...
Honestly, I love that that description of an idiom. Everyone's like, what do you mean? And you have to give an entire like essay on it.
Yeah, give them a QR code for this episode.
Yeah. So I tell you all this because I ran across an article probably a year or two ago that said that the fig, the famous delicious fig that we eat, and this is all the same one that we eat, many of them are these parthenocarpic plants. They do not produce necessarily fertilized seeds, which is commonly referred to as a genetic dead end.
Sure.
Because you're not making any new seeds. So any of your fruit, as soon as that tree dies, then there's nothing left. There's no new progenitors. There's no new little seeds that are continuing that germline. So that has played a huge role in this article I found where they said, we have evidence that the initial first cultivated trees were done in the Levant, in the Jordan Valley, over in what we now call Israel today, in that area of the world. They saw and claimed that they have found evidence that these trees, these fig trees, were cultivated by humans 12,000 years before present.
Whoa.
Which, to put into a little perspective, the earliest that we've been able to really like certainly say that people have been cultivating trees in the way that we would understand that today is about 7,000 years ago, and it was olives.
Is that all agriculture, or is that just trees?
No. In fact, that would be just trees.
Okay.
And that is the big thing here. That's why this is kind of all about gluttony, because it's really a discussion of when did we start to actually perform and do agriculture in the way that we understand it today. So we can go back and forth about the debates of, like, say, civilization. Where did civilization first happen? Everyone says, wow, the Fertile Crescent, but that's very Eurocentric. That's all the people of the, quote, West. They trace their history back to what is essentially the Middle East today, Southwest Asia. Then that became Greece, and then it was under the Romans, and then that became Europe, and now we do the same kind of things as what the Italians did. The Italians learned it from the Greeks from these people back in Judea, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
But then you also say, well, there's also agriculture is invented and done down in South America and Africa.
Oh, sure.
And over in East Asia, it was done down in the South Pacific Islands, all these different places. So the idea of agriculture and it starting is like this agricultural revolution. Do you remember that from like high school?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it is like 10,000, 12,000 years ago.
Sure, in that very specific place.
Yes, in the Fertile Crescent, right? Which now we're like, eh, that's ridiculous. It's a very Eurocentric idea.
I didn't know that part.
Oh, yeah, because people like essentially said, well, this is where it was invented. And then we're like, well, what about China? They kind of independently have this whole agriculture about rice. Are we just going to like forget about that? Like that wasn't necessarily traded from the Levant, from the Middle East, from Judea. It wasn't traded over to China where they said, great, and we're going to do it now with rice. They just learned to do it themselves.
Sure, okay.
And peoples all over the world learned to do this. Native Americans don't get credit, but I think we can make the argument that they performed some kind of agricultural land management. It wasn't in the traditional sense where they would adjust the land and use plows and like plant things in certain places.
Sure.
But they would do it in a way that was leaving the land so that it would continue to produce whatever it was that they were making.
At the very least, growing crops.
Yeah, exactly. And they did it with corn and squash for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But they also did it with rice, and they did it with camas over here in the Pacific Northwest, where they would burn vast forest areas so that camas lily would grow up, and then they would eat all the camas lily bulbs. So it's like, is that agriculture? Yeah, I think it is. But mainly the debate has been over, when can we say for sure, when was the very first evidence of this?
Yeah,
we used to think it was legumes and then like barleys and different cereal grains and things like that. But then people started looking at trees and they're like, well, okay, maybe the jujube tree in northern China. They look back and they find like evidence that where they can surely say this tree was adjusted, this fruit came from a human. So it's the first time that we made that like big jump to agriculture, which is just such a fraud, by the way, before we get too far.
Wow.
Fraud.
What?
Agriculture. Have you not heard about this
agriculture
idea?
Agriculture is a fraud?
Yes.
Is so, this going to take us on a whole...
No. Okay. It'll be very quick okay. where essentially you work harder for less food, more or less.
Oh.
That's what it is.
As opposed to gathering?
Yeah, exactly. So okay. hunter-gatherers would spend less time getting food and it would be more nutritious and more varied
right.
than what people do now where they work and work and work and they have to fight all these other things and the diversity of food has shrunk greatly.
Sure, yeah.
And now that's what our entire world is on.
True, yeah.
But it made us more powerful. Mm-hmm. So the people who did this, there's maybe a famous story of Cain and Abel. Mm. It could be an allegory of hunter-gatherers versus agriculturalists.
Right. And so, the agriculturist killing the hunter-gatherer.
Exactly. And yeah, taking over that. Their land because mm-hmm. they're making it into essentially crops.
Sure.
Anyway, we're not going to get any further into it.
Cool.
But it is it's one of these huge things. We're never going back. That's simply not going to happen.
Sure. Well,
it won't happen by choice.
Yeah.
Let me put it that way. It won't happen by majority choice.
In the post-apocalypse, you got to take what you can get.
You're going to start hunting and gathering
mm-hmm.
again. So this initial article basically said that we've found evidence in what is now Israel of these very particular kind of figs that are parthenocarpic. They have no actual pollinated viable little drupelets inside. So that would tell you that because they found it in an archaeological site and a few different ones, they jumped to the conclusion that because we found these here, these are figs that do not naturally reproduce themselves.
Ah.
So it must be that people had to, they found these figs, they figured it out that, oh, these don't regrow themselves. So let's take twigs of those, put them in the ground, those will grow into new trees, which figs do readily.
Mm-hmm.
And then, ba-ba-ba-ba, now you are agriculturally husbanded to a tree. So they claimed, and this is why, of course, this is gluttony. Gluttony it's Christians. Christians came from the Middle East, Judea. All this revolves literally around, like, historically speaking, the place we're talking about mm-hmm. right now today. But in a larger sense, this is potentially evidence that humans started doing agriculture on this very tree, Ficus carica,
wow.
the common fig, 12,000 years ago.
Holy shit.
Yeah, right?
Amazing.
Exactly. Now, to ruin it.
Now, when you first showed up.
Yeah, what did I say, Alex?
You said, because I texted you asking if we could record a touch later.
Mm-hmm.
And you were like, that's great because, and I'm paraphrasing, my world has just been rocked. And I think you said our world or something to that effect. I've saved us from certain doom, you said.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, yeah.
And then I was like, holy shit, what happened? I thought it was like our taxes
mm-hmm.
or...
I know, Alex gets worried about real world things.
And you're like,
no, the internet's going to rip us apart.
You found something in the 11th hour.
Yes. Well, I refound it.
Sure.
I should argue. I found it initially, then I was like, I got to make sure to find that. Due diligence requires mm-hmm. that I look at both sides of this argument.
Of course.
And it turns out the other side of the argument that this is probably not actually 100% accurate is probably the actual more accurate answer.
Okay. So what is the big Watergate
right?
of this big story?
Well, so this article that I initially found was put out by some Harvard University researchers back in 2006.
Okay.
And they said, in fact, the name of the article is Figs Were First. Which is great. It's a very, you know, catchy.
Super catchy.
Catchy article. And this is a like popular science magazine article that I found from Harvard. So I went and read through the actual article and they just made a little bit too many conclusion jumps. There was another guy who wrote a like 4-page comment who basically said, nah, baby, that ain't the case.
Wow.
And he made this fun argument, which I say is fun because it's really just the argument is a botanical argument where he says, no, you said that figs are an evolutionary dead end if they are parthenocarpic. However, a fig tree that is growing, they're of two different kinds. One will make these hermaphroditic figs, these ones that have both the male flowers in one side and the female flowers in another side. The whole fig wasp process continues like normal. There are other figs that almost only make female figs. They only produce figs that are female and pistillate flowers inside of that syconia.
Okay.
So those would be the ones that are evolutionary dead end because they're not really like producing the other male things that go around. So it is what the term they used is functionally dioecious, which I was like, what does that mean?
Interesting.
Like if you're functionally dioecious, aren't you just dioecious?
Functionally as in like an adjective, like
kind of, yeah. Okay. So the term is gynodioecious, which literally means the sexes are on different plants, but it's not dioecious in the sense where you have tree A and tree B produce both either kind of flower, male, female kind of thing, pistillate, which is ovulate.
Just dioecious.
Just normal dioecious.
Okay.
But this is the case where there are hermaphroditic caprifigs, which is Ficus carica variety caprificus, which is very fun.
Oh, interesting.
And then there are the female figs that only produce these female flowers in their figs, which is Ficus carica variety domestica.
Okay.
And that's domestica because we can eat them. They make these seedless, essentially, variety of fig.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy went through and said, well, so here's the thing. You can have those female figs get pollinated by one of those other fig plants that has a wasp, leave it with pollen, go into the female fig, pollinate that, boom, you're good to go. It doesn't happen to all of them.
Sure.
But that means that the genes would continue on with that, say, mutation to create figs that are seedless.
Okay.
So essentially, this is why it's kind of a half and half kind of deal, where it's, let's say, Alex, you are a female fig tree.
Thank you.
You produce 600 figs. Mm. You're big one. You've been tall. You've been growing here for a long time. Everyone's really stoked about you.
Okay.
So you are chilling, and you have the ability to create these parthenocarpic, these virgin figs, which is what parthenocarpic means. Essentially, it's a virgin birth is what it is.
I know we're so late in the episode for me to ask this. It's one of those, like, I don't know what it means, and I'm too scared to ask.
Oh.
Parthenocarpet.
Yeah, carpic.
Carpic.
Yeah.
Can you just remind me really quickly? Parthenocarpic means that it doesn't have the wasp thing going on?
Yeah. So the term parthenocarpy refers to ovaries developing into seedless fruit in the absence of fertilization.
Okay.
So essentially, you would have to be fertilized in order for the seed to start developing inside the ovary of the plant, and then you get a fruit, tomato, cherry, you name it.
Uh-huh.
If it doesn't get fertilized, the seed does not develop, and essentially that entire thing gets aborted. It just kind of stops becoming whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's no point for a flower, a plant, anything to produce a big, giant, succulent seed cover if there's no seed.
Sure.
You know?
Okay.
So it's great for us. We don't want seeds in our fruit. So we've actually developed this and found it in a bunch of things like bananas and grapes and all these things. So it happens in nature naturally, but usually it's assumed to be that dead end.
Okay.
So sometimes it happens and it is literally just the immaculate conception of a fig is the best way to think about
it. Wow. Okay.
There's no sex involved. Mm-hmm. The fig does not get pollinated, and then it becomes a big fig anyway, rather than being aborted.
Still becomes a big juicy fruit.
Exactly.
Which is sort of is like the jackpot for humans.
Yeah. Everyone loves it. And that is why that initial thing, they said humans must have found this because this doesn't continue on.
Right. Right. Okay.
But back to you being a giant 600 fig, female fig.
Uh-huh.
Maybe 25 get pollinated from a different fig that has another wasp that comes out and actually goes into your little ostiole and then gets yourself pollinated.
Okay.
Or at least a couple of your figs. So the gene that you have in you gets carried on to another, but that gene says only make female figs and do not reproduce the normal way.
Okay.
So theoretically, actually, it can continually breed itself, so it's not an evolutionary dead end. So you can't just jump to the conclusion that people, yes, did in fact know this, figure it out, and start breeding this this basically dead end in an evolutionary sense tree.
Cool.
So people basically said, hold on. That's a really intense statement, because essentially that's saying you're pushing back the assumed first cultivated plant that we can say for sure by like 5,000 years.
Right.
Which is a crazy long time period.
It would be groundbreaking.
It would be groundbreaking, yeah. Going from 7,000 years ago to 12,000 years ago. Like, it's nearly doubling the amount of time,
mm-hmm.
Which, if that is the case, which it very well could be, no one is saying this is definitely not the case. They're just saying this is definitely not positive, 100% foolproof evidence that it is the case.
Right. It's not impossible, but they didn't present the evidence to prove that it is
exactly.
It is true.
Yeah, and it's the idea of parsimony, where you can basically give another perfectly reasonable explanation for something that's far simpler,
mm-hmm.
And that is what you should go with. So they said this must be people doing it. This other guy basically said, actually, no, this can happen normally, and you had a couple facts wrong, botanically speaking, in your article. Here's the actual facts, and here's how this works.
Wow.
So the gluttony of humans, which has definitely started, I would argue, to really go into overdrive because of agriculture, and that has led, in my opinion, to all the rest of the sins that we've ever created. I actually don't know if I've ever told you this, Alex, but I find agriculture to be on par with like capitalism, to be two of the biggest, like, most worst things that have put the world in the place that it is today.
Like large scale agriculture?
No.
You're not talking about like the person growing a garden out back.
I am talking about that person.
Oh, you are talking about
that
person.
Yes, because it's all one big thing. The reason why I say is that way back when, you would just be a hunter-gatherer. You would move around. Think the and I don't want to do this with a big paintbrush here, a big broad brush, but like the tribes in North America were more or less hunter-gatherer. They moved around a lot. There were some that stayed put. There were some that did a lot of different agricultural-like things.
Because you want to move with the things that you're hunting and gathering.
Exactly.
Which all have natural migration patterns.
Precisely, yeah. Right. And you would go up into the mountains to collect things there. Then when the mountains got cold, you'd move down to the valleys. You'd collect things during different seasons. And it was kind of this just cyclical kind of pattern.
Sure.
You follow these things. Now, as soon as you started doing agriculture, you stayed put.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you got this big glut of food, you needed land.
Sure.
As soon as you needed land, you started saying, stay off of my land.
Put this up some walls.
Exactly. Then everything starts to precipitate out,
yeah.
In the sense of this is my space, not your space, rather than something that's more like, yeah, this is my territory and I move around here. Now you're staying put and you're taking up a bunch more land because you are specializing and you can always feed everyone. Now you have people that are doing other things rather than just everyone working in this big kind of cohesion of a group. And there's a lot more to this. I'm barely touching the surface, but there's a lot more scientifically minded, smart people who've talked about mm-hmm. this. But that's like the one thing you can go back to and point at that then has led to the creation of a lot of different cultural things that we have in our world today that are huge issues.
Like, sure.
Anyway, a topic for another time.
I'm kind of on board with you, though. Like, I mean, I think there are some good things to come out of agriculture. But
oh, sure, yeah.
I also think, in general, I like your reasoning of, like, one thing leads to another.
Yeah.
Like, the whole reason we, you know, most wars are, like, a matter of land or resources,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly, yeah.
Which all comes from a lack of land and resources, which all comes from, well, we already worked it all the land that we have.
Mm-hmm,
so let's go next door and grab theirs.
Population got too big. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that also very well could be a Eurocentric idea where that happened more in Europe than it did in some other places. So it's, I'm not an expert on it. This is just things that I've read and picked up in the world, but it's an interesting idea about it being like this central point. And I love also that it is this seven deadly sin, because it is gluttony. You shouldn't be gluttonous.
Mm.
Don't eat too much, you know, and it's very much the idea of don't take more than you need.
Because sure.
I don't think gluttony has to be specifically food, but most of the time it is food related.
Yeah.
The glutton. But I think it also has to do with literal land. Like, you can be hungry and, I'm going to eat up every bit of space over here and I'm going to take it over, you know? So I just, yeah, gluttony, I think, is a really interesting one. And this tree particularly, and then all the other, like, biblical things that come with it, like, we haven't even touched on. This could be a whole book about how figs and gluttony and sins and religion and land and everything, like, all comes down to, like, well, let's just follow this fig and where it goes and how agriculture developed. And then, oh, here's this other character called the persimmon. Oh, and here's this other character called the olive and the pomegranate. You know, all these kinds of things.
Sure.
Like, it's all the same thing of all these different trees and how agriculture developed. It's just, it goes on forever.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I'm hungry.
Casey, don't be a glutton. No more eating. Casey, let's review this fig tree. Let's give it a common rating for this common fig tree.
Yeah, common.
We got to do so after a break. We'll be right back with the gluttonous fig tree. Shouldn't say that. The fig tree is not gluttonous. The humans around the glutton, around the fig. Anyway, we'll be right back.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Casey and I just had an awful conversation. And now, Casey.
And now.
We get to give an arbitrary rating to a tree, which is pretty fun.
It is. It's so much fun, dude. Yeah.
Here's how it works. We're going to have some final thoughts on the common fig. And then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor.
Mm-hmm.
And not more than it needs, Casey.
No.
For that would be gluttonous.
Exactly.
And this send you straight
the right
to
amount.
Tree hell. Casey, we begin with you.
Okay. I don't like the fig tree. I think it's a dumb tree. I don't think you should plant it. I don't think you should put it in your yard. It grows too fast. It grows too wild. You don't take care of it. I'm sorry. You don't, and you know you don't. Then it grows too big. You cut it down. It sprouts back up, and then it flails all over the place, and then it's technically considered a tree, so you got to get a permit to remove it, and it just is awful. There are better trees to plant all over the place. There's no reason that you need to have a fig. If you really like figs that much, great. Have a fig, but you better take care of it. And I'm looking at you. I very much want people to plant trees that they don't need to maintain, because they inevitably plant a pear or an apple or a cherry or a plum or whatever fruit tree.
They won't maintain it.
And they won't.
Even if they say they're going to.
Yeah, for 30 seconds. And figs are probably one of the worst because they grow fast.
Mm.
They get big and wily fast.
And then come whenever, late summer, the whole neighborhood smells like mead.
Yeah. There's figs rotting everywhere.
Nobody took care of the figs, yeah.
Yeah, and it's fine. If you want your figs and you're going to do it, great. It's a two.
What?
It's a two. The whole tree is a two. I don't want to see it. Every time I do see it, I'm annoyed by it. It's
2.0 golden cones of honor.
2.0 golden cones of honor. Might be one of my lowest.
At that point, they're not even golden or honor full.
No, you know what? I think they should still be. You're still on the scale.
Two golden cones of honor.
Absolutely two. I'm sorry if you dislike this. Just don't plant a fig. And if you do plant a fig, put a sign on it. It says, Casey, I'm sorry I planted this. I will be taking care of it. I promise. And if you don't, cut it down. Plant a real tree.
I think if you're going to plant a fruit tree, and if you live in like a suburb and you're going to plant a fruit tree, you should have to like go door to door and have people sign up that thing.
That would be so good.
Like, or you like verbally, swear an oath that you're going to pick the apples. How about if you don't take care of the fruit that comes off of it, you have to stand on a box in the middle of your yard and everybody stands on the sidewalk and throws the rotten fruit at you and boos and hisses.
You're in a stockade kind of thing?
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Hiss, hiss.
Yeah. So I will stop there. Alex,
thank you.
I want to know your opinion of two things. One, the fig tree.
Mm-hmm.
And B, all the kind of stuff we talked about. I know I kind of was a talking head there for a bit, just going
That's
off.
Okay.
So I'm curious your thoughts.
A bit of a David, I can never remember his last name. Byrne.
Oh.
But you were a bit of a David Byrne this episode.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's okay.
Yeah, I stopped making sense.
I'm about to burn down this house. So fig tree, I'm kind of with you, Case.
Yes.
I don't really. This is a typical white person thing. They don't want to go to Mexico and talk to the people. They just want to eat tacos at their favorite local white-owned Mexican restaurant,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
You'll eat their food.
Wow.
I love a fig. I love figs. I do. I remember my mom bringing home, when I was a kid, my mom would bring home like a, you know, what is that called? Like a box, but like a pallet or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
A flat of figs.
Yes.
And I thought they were the strangest thing. And she would open them up and show me. And I was like, I don't even know how to eat that.
Yeah.
Because at that age, it's just like you take the food and you put it in your mouth.
Yeah.
You don't have to like, you're not expected as a child to like peel something and only eat the insides and then put
Wait, what?
Yeah, you know.
Don't you just take a bite of it?
I think when we were younger, at least my mom was like, you just kind of eat it like an orange, like,
oh,
and discard
okay.
the
yeah,
peel.
Yeah.
Now I think, yeah, I would eat the whole thing.
Because I was like, maybe half the reason I'm so against figs is that I've just
You've been eating
like,
the skin.
Yeah, man, these oranges are so gross. They're so bitter on the outside.
Yeah.
I just want to eat the inside stuff.
You're so just like, poisoning yourself with tannins.
Have you been eating the peels your entire life?
But now as an adult, I'm like, give me that fig.
Wow.
I love fig Newtons. Like, yeah. I think they make a great filling and things.
How are you about figgy pudding?
I love figgy pudding.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I often mix it up with sticky toffee pudding, which I'm a bigger fan of.
Oh, geez. I didn't even know what that is.
It's incredible.
Okay.
The fig tree as a tree is just okay.
Oh, thank God.
The bark is like a zero. Who gives a shit? The leaves are really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I like the leaves a lot. A leaf does not a tree make. So to the fig, I want to give it a high rating because of the fig, but I don't even think it deserves that.
It could be in a balance. I mean, for the mango, you gave it a 10 just because of the mango.
That's
You're like, this could look 100% different. I don't care.
But
if this is the mango.
That's a mango.
That's true. That's fair.
It's not all fruits are created equal.
I agree.
So I'll give the fig like a 5.0.
5.0, that's fair. I think it goes right down the middle.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think about the idea that figs are the gluttonous precursor to all the problems in our world?
I think that's propaganda.
Now that's propaganda.
That was our review of The Common Fig. We hope you enjoyed it, Casey. Oh, it's time for our completely arbitrary AMA. This week, our question comes from JG.
Oh, JG.
Now, JG gets a lot of airtime on this podcast.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. For good reason.
Don't get gluttonous, JG.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No.
If you were tasked with creating a national anthem for trees,
wow,
what message would it convey and what instruments would you use?
Obviously, woodwinds.
Of course.
Duh.
I would say like probably acoustic instruments across the board.
I think it should be woodwinds. And now you are the instrumentalist here. Could you remind us what the woodwinds are?
We're talking your clarinets, your oboes,
uh-huh.
your bassoons.
Yeah.
Those
nice.
Are probably the big three.
Yeah. Now this is this does not include things that have reeds in it. So a woodwind does not include any brass.
Brass don't have reeds.
Oh.
Woodwinds have reeds.
Wow. I didn't know that.
So wood and plant. Yeah, wood and reeds.
I guess that is the woodwind.
Yeah.
Ha,
that's
good.
The wood of the woodwind.
Man, I'm good.
Yeah, I think woodwinds are a great choice, not just thematically, but they're also nice, soft, kind of warm tone.
Yeah. So I think it should be slow and meandering, like a sunrise through a spring forest where the leaves have just come out, so they're still kind of fresh and new.
Mm, some nice imagery.
That's the feeling I want. I want it to
sure.
be a little bit slower. I want it to be at the tree's pace.
What if we did, we kind of, the song itself sort of mapped the growth of a tree.
Yes. Yeah. I think that would be great. And in the, it also should do something about the seasons, the seasonality.
For sure.
You know, And I think
this is probably going to end up being like four movements, 20 minutes a piece.
Oh yeah, no, we can't do that. We gotta pull it down to like you're listening to it at the beginning of a soccer match between the shrubs and the trees.
A minute and a half.
Yeah, I think it should be no more than a minute and a half, maybe even a minute. So, but we can still have four parts, but we have to very, very selectively put it together.
Okay.
So I think you should go up. And then that should be spring.
Uh-huh.
Then I think there should be summer, which is very big. And then I think there should be a fall and then a winter.
Yeah.
And the winter, I think, should end with an uplifting note of the first bit of spring.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So I want that. I want the cycle. It's like a wave form, you know? Mm-hmm. Like you start in the middle, you go down, you go up, and then you go back down and you end in the middle on the way down again.
It's your narrative arc.
Yeah. I want that narrative arc, but
I would pitch that we end with spring. Into like the full thing, have it be really triumphant for the last 15 seconds or so.
All right, yeah, okay, I'm with that, yeah.
But I would also pitch that we have some lyrics.
Yeah, okay.
As most anthems do.
They do, yes.
It can't be nationalist, you know, no flags, right? Like we're only giving thanks to nature's bounty.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what, I mean, lyrically.
Lyrically, yeah.
Is it from the perspective of the trees?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. Because that's what national anthems. Well, I guess some of them are like, talking about the glories of the nation.
Yeah. I think they're mostly national anthems are like, oh, we love you. You being the motherland or the nation.
Yes. Yes.
Which is so fucked, by the way.
Yeah. It's a funny thing. It's a funny thing.
Oh boy. I think lyrically it's just giving thanks for nature's gift to us of trees.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So maybe some
also like accolades, like oh, you grow so strong and tall.
Yeah, exactly. I think that would be great. Your flowers like herald in the sunshine.
Yeah, yeah,
Your sap brings light to ground.
Now you're on something. Yeah. We map the growth of the song to human life.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole song, when you look at it, you know, as a whole, as a poem, is like,
exactly,
is like, we are the same. Like,
yes,
we are trees.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
Dig it. That's what I would do.
All right. All there right. You have it.
Write that out. And Alex is going to sing it, JG.
Or we could just go with the Olympics theme on Melodica.
Yeah. Or we could just do that. You know what? I don't have a lot of time in the day, so let's just do that.
Yeah, let's copy and paste this one, guys. All right.
We're just going to do... Yeah, that would be great. let me think for a second. You know what? Yeah, we actually do this only every now and then, but I think it would be exactly that.
Thank you, JG, for your question. Hey, if you've got a question for the podcast, join arbitrarypod.supercast.com. We call it Completely Arbitrary Tremium. Become a Tremium member today. That's arbitrarypod.supercast.com. All sorts of fun rewards there. And you get to support this podcast that you love so much.
That's right. Hey, just before we started this whole series, we did a live stream.
That's right.
We talked all about what we're going to do.
That's right.
And we covered the actual real seven deadly stems, those being stems that are deadly and are thorny.
Your thorns and your prickles and spikes and such.
Exactly. So you want to do stuff like that. You want to interact with us, talk with us, send us questions, get cones.
Completely Arbitrary Tremium. Yeah. Arbitrarypod.supercast.com. Casey Clapp.
Alex Croson. Great work today.
You too, man. That was a wild ride, I will
Historical,
say.
Historical.
it's like a wishbone. We're taking a ride through history through the eyes of a little terrier. A
small little terrier with a little nubby tail.
Mm-hmm. The heart of gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
True. Thank you so much for listening to this stemful episode of Completely Arbitrary. We will see you next week for another of the seven deadly stems.
This next one is wrath.
Wow, wrath.
Uh-huh.
Can't wait. We'll see you then, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp. Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals. If you want to support this podcast and become a Tremium member, head over to arbitrarypod.supercast.com. Thanks for listening.